Good morning, Christ Church. Thank you for being with us today. Let me say a prayer for us. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you for this day. I thank you for this space, this time that you've given us to connect to you. I pray that you would open up our hearts to who you are and what you can do when we say yes to this adventure of faith with you. Help us, I pray, in Jesus' name. Amen. Many years ago, my sister and I read a book called The Time Traveler's Wife. And it takes what seems like this incredible idea, like traveling through time, and everybody's had these different variations about how you could do it, if you could do it, but it puts a very real-life spin on this idea. There's a man named Henry who's able to travel through time, but unfortunately, he can't control it. He can't control where he goes, he can't control when he goes, and also he runs into the hard problem of he doesn't take anything with him when this happens, not even the clothes he's wearing. So he finds himself in these new places, new times, all alone with absolutely nothing with him, not even clothes, which can become very dangerous when he learns how to run very, very fast. At one point in the story, his paths cross with a woman named Claire, and what makes the story interesting is Claire has grown up her whole life knowing Henry. He would travel back as an older man to her time while she was a young girl growing up. But when they met in real time, he's never met her yet. His future is her past, and they eventually fall in love, get married. The rest of the story is kind of how they work through the challenges they face building this life together with him being able to travel through time. Now, I love stories like this because they kind of force you to think about the idea, what would you do in this kind of a situation? If you were dropped in a completely different time, a completely different place, what would you do? How would you react? As you read the story and you see how their lives unfold and the choices you make, you question yourself, who would you become in situations just like this? Now, many of us have come to know as best as we can who we are right here and right now. But what if our circumstances changed? We've learned all too quickly how fast the world can change around us. Who would we be in these different circumstances? Over the next coming weeks, we're going to study the life of a man and his friends who had this very thing happen to them. His name is Daniel, and we find the history of his life in a book in the Old Testament called Daniel, right after him. And Daniel was a man who grew up in Jerusalem. He had a really good life there. He was well off. He was smart and had this really bright future ahead of him. He had this almost wonderfully sheltered existence where he was. His world was secure. It was comfortable until war showed up. And he didn't live in the most peaceful of times. But when the Babylonian army came and they knocked on his country, Jerusalem's front door, they didn't last long. His country was quickly defeated, and King Nebuchadnezzar's army raided the temple of God, and they took out all the treasures that they could find and carry out, the gold, the silver, the bronze. They took people with them as well, those who were higher ranking and educated, royals and nobles. They took it all back to Babylon with them. And Daniel and a group of three of his friends were part of this group that were taken into captivity into the country of Babylon. They were taken from their homes, everything they knew, everything they'd grown up understanding, and brought to this new place. And unfortunately, Nebuchadnezzar didn't stop with just his first attack on Jerusalem. There was a second attack and then a third attack until about 20 years after the first one, just shy of 20 years, his home was completely destroyed. The temple lay in ruins. The city was a mess. And Daniel is in this new place, in this entirely new situation. He's not at home anymore. He's not around everybody he knows in the culture that he grew up. He's a stranger in this foreign land, and there's new laws and new cultures, and they have different gods for all of these different things. They have a different education program and different ways of eating and different traditions and different rhythms for life. So Daniel and his friends are put into this new situation trying to understand who would they become in this context. Daniel's a young man, probably about early 20 when this starts happening in his life. And when he's taken to Babylon, he and his friends are put with a group of men that are trained in the service of the king. It's a 3-year educational program that puts them in this kind of learning experience. They learn the language, the literature, the customs of this new country, Babylon. They were fed in this program the food and wine from the king's table that he ate. They changed their names. So now they're in this new culture, this new program, this new learning. They changed their names as well. No longer would it be Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Now they would be Belteshazzar, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There's a reason that King Nebuchadnezzar would do this. He'd conquered a country. He defeated it. He completely trashed it, razed it to the ground, left nothing behind. And now he wanted to conquer the culture that was left in the people that he'd brought back to his home country. He was trying to change their identity, to get rid of the cultural distinctiveness that set them apart as being from a different place. So he changed their names. He connected their names not to their god, but to his gods. And he trained them and gave them his food to eat like they ate and assimilated them into this Babylonian culture. They were no longer going to be known as Israelites. They were no longer going to be known by their culture in Jerusalem, but now who they were in Babylon. It was no longer their culture that they grew up with, their standards, but that they would learn from the Babylonians. But Daniel and his friends made a decision. In Daniel chapter 1, verse 8, this is what it says. Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. He asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. They decided they were just going to eat vegetables and water. So here you have Daniel and his friends. They're put in this new context. They accepted the new name. They accepted the training, the education, but they created this boundary for themselves, this line at the food that they were going to eat. Now, it's interesting because lots of people who've studied the book of Daniel and the commentators have all these theories, like why would Daniel and his friends refuse to eat the food and drink the wine that the king was offering them? And so some commentators say that, you know, it was because of their Jewish dietary laws. You can read in the Old Testament and the Mosaic law, there was lots of rules about how Jewish Israelite people should eat. But interestingly enough, it didn't forbid them wine and it didn't require them to be vegetarians. So that maybe is not the right one. And other ideas about this food could have been consecrated to idols and different ceremonies, but the author doesn't tell us that specifically. What we know is that this decision sets Daniel and his friends apart. The word defile, it's a spiritual word. Like it causes impurity, right? There's something that would upset their faith, their spirituality in the decisions, and they chose not to defile themselves in this way. There's nothing unlawful about eating the food. There's nothing intrinsically wrong if they had eaten the food they were given. But they'd made this decision and they chose to discipline themselves in this way. There was something of their identity in God, who he had created them to be, that they weren't going to let go of. They'd learn from this new culture. They would grow in this new setting, but they wouldn't lose their connection to God, their identity, and their faith in him. And it's a challenge to what they would let be taken away from them, right? It's a challenge to what would erase everything about their past and who they were and how they'd grown up. But to really fulfill this, to accomplish this new thing they've kind of set for themselves, they need the help of the chief official who's in charge of the group that they are part of. And so they propose this idea to him that we don't want to do this in this way. We don't want to defile ourselves. And his fear is that they're going to get to this end of this training period and look worse than all of the other men who are training with them in their age group. And that because they're not getting where they should be, he will be responsible. He'll get in trouble with the king for their lack. And so Daniel challenges them and says, let us just try it for 10 days. Just give us a chance for 10 days. And then at the end of those 10 days, we'll eat vegetables. We'll drink water. We won't eat what's at the king's table. Test us. Compare us to everybody else in the program and see how it goes. If we aren't doing well, then we'll leave it up to your decision and whatever you see fit. So the official reluctantly agrees and lets them go about the next 10 days trying to do it their way. At the end of 10 days, Daniel and his three friends end up looking healthier and better nourished than any of the other young men who'd been in the same program. And so the official relents. He let them keep to this diet going forward. You know, it's interesting because even though Daniel is in this new place, this new country, far from everything he knows and is comfortable with in life, God is still with him, even in this far away place. Even far from everything he knew, God was with Daniel and his friends, and he was also for them. Look at what it says in verse 18. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them into his service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. Daniel and his friends were able to learn and grow in this new environment. They stood out with their wisdom and their understanding. They were better than anybody else, considered the smartest in the land, compared to everybody else people would go to at the time to seek wisdom and advice. God was with this group of guys. They kept their identity with him, grew with him, even in a very different world from what they knew. Now, I find this part of Daniel an interesting idea. How do we respond to new cultures, right? The world around us is constantly changing. Culture is an ever-evolving thing, and we've learned that quickly over the last few years. The world is good, but it still looks different than it did a few years ago, and it's not done changing yet. The world is going to keep changing around us. And even if our whole world doesn't change like it did, sometimes our life circumstances do. We send our kids to college. We went away to college, and the world was different than it was how we grew up. Sometimes you get a new job, and you're around new people, have a new boss, and a new culture in this new environment. You get married. You start a family. You create your own family culture and how it looks here and what you guys do. Our world changes. Our culture changes, and we can ask ourselves the same question. Who will we be? How will we relate to the world around us? How will we relate to people around us when all of these things are going on? Daniel had three options how he could respond in this new world. The first one is he could be against it. He didn't want to be taken captive. I mean, it's not like he was like, sign me up for this program, right? Like, he had a country that he loved, and he had rights there, and he had a whole culture that existed and a growing up plan, and he had dreams, and they changed. He could have been very against what happened. He could have fought it and avoided anything different. He could have gone on and on complaining about what he didn't like and what wasn't fair, and he could have been hostile to the people around him. He could have set himself apart and seen himself as superior than everybody else. He could have just outright refused to learn anything new. He could have avoided meeting new people, building relationships, and just held himself apart completely against this new world, this new culture he was a part of. On the other hand, he could have been just like everybody else. He could have been adapted to all of the new things, the new culture, and lost everything about his old self, right? He's in this new place. It's a clean slate. It's a new start. He could have been anybody he wanted to be. He could have just done what everybody else was doing and conformed to this new world and what was happening around him. He could have done everything he needed to adapt and fit in and go along with what was happening around him. He could have just let go of and changed what made him different and distinct to be part of this new world and this new culture. Or his third option was he could have been for it. He could have engaged in the new culture and worked with them, learned and grown and externally adapted and learned the language and customs while internally, inwardly clinging to who he is, his faith, his relationship to God, and who he was called to be. He could live in the society without looking for the approval of who he is in his life from the culture he was part of. Now, it's interesting because Daniel's story is part of a whole history that God's telling in the Old Testament, and it's all woven together. You can read all the way back to Abraham. God called this people to be his people and brought them to a land that he would give them, and he made this covenant that he would be their God and they would be his people. And we see that happening, and then we see all the way through Joseph, they're prospering, and then they're in Egypt, and then hundreds of years go by, and they go from being invited guests to slaves in another country. And God rescues them through slavery, and with Moses, he brings them out into the wilderness, and the first generation doesn't get it right, so a second generation rises up, and Joshua leads the campaign to overtake this promised land, and they move in, and they set up homes, and they set up towns and cities, and they have prophets and judges and kings, and all of a sudden, they're this prosperous country, and they've got prophets showing up saying, look, you got to stop doing what you're doing and turn back to God. If you don't, you're not going to like what happens. And then we find what happens, and the two kingdoms are broken apart, and one kingdom is destroyed, but still Daniel's kingdom, Jerusalem, the southern kingdom, is going, even though it's not as it should be, until it isn't. Until Babylon comes in and destroys everything, and this small group, a remnant, is left, carried away into captivity. But the prophet Jeremiah actually wrote the group of people who were exiled from home, who were living in captivity in Babylon. He wrote them a letter, and this is what he said. He said, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all of those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses, settle down, plant gardens, eat what they produce. Marry, have sons and daughters, find wives for your sons and give daughters in marriage, so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there, do not decrease. Also, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. Here's what Jeremiah is saying. Yeah, you are far from home. This world looks different. You're in a different city, in a different world, in a different culture, but live there, settle there, be for this new city that you are in. Have a positive attitude towards it. Build a life there, grow there, make families, increase, don't decrease. And hey, work for the peace and the prosperity of your city. Pray for it, because when it prospers, you'll prosper. And he's reminding Daniel and his friends and the people there, yes, you're far from home. Yes, your world is different, but God is still with you. God is still at work. Be for your city, not against it. Be for your city, not just like everybody else in it. Work for the peace and the prosperity there while clinging to your faith and identity in God. And that's what Daniel and his friends did. They became part of Babylon. They learned the language. They grew knowledgeable in the customs there. But they kept their faith in God and their relationship to him, and it set them apart. And as we're going to keep learning about Daniel and what comes up in his life, God was with them and he blessed them there. Now, we have the same choice before us today. How are we going to relate in this world that we live in? The first two choices are the easiest, right? You can just avoid it. The world is terrible. It's worse than it's ever been. Kids these days, you never know what's going to come out. And we can fight it and avoid it and complain about it. Or we can just give and be like, well, you know what? The tide is moving, roll with the flow, just accept everything and go along with it. But see, these ideas were never who God has called us to be. Instead, God's saying, be for your community, be for your city, work for peace, work for prosperity where we are, but don't lose who we are in Jesus Christ. Don't lose who he created us to be. See, it requires more faith and work to live in this spot than it does in the other ones. In the other ones, we could be like, well, in the end, God's going to make it all right. I'll just whatever, right? We can complain and be like, well, we're Christians and we're set apart and we're better than everybody else. It's almost an easier out to live that way. It's an easier out to just give in and accept everything. It requires a ton of faith and work to live in the kind of way that says, I am for the people that live around me, the culture, the community. I want it to prosper. And I'm also living in this identity that I have in Jesus Christ. It's harder, but it's always going to be the better life there. Look, it wasn't easy for Daniel and his friends to choose this path. There's going to be tensions and obstacles and hardships. But because they did, we're going to see again and again how God is at work and an entire kingdom is going to see him move. An entire country and culture is going to see God show up in powerful ways. and kings who had no idea who God is are going to learn about him, turn to him, and even end up praying for God to do good. By living with God and for our communities, we get to add value. We get to be the people who show up not to complain, not to tear down, not to destroy, not to rail against, but to help and make things better. We get to be involved and work for the good and peace of our communities right where we are now. I have always been a big fan of Mr. Rogers, and I know he gets a bad rap, but man, guy was smart, and he had some, listen to what he says. We live in a world where we need to share responsibility. It's easy to say it's not my child, not my community, not my world, not my problem. Then there are those who see the need and respond. He said, I consider those people my heroes. Nobody else can live the life you live. And even though no human being is perfect, we always have the chance to bring what's unique about us to life in a redeeming way. He said, imagine what our real neighborhoods would be like if each of us offered, as a matter of course, just one kind word to another person. We get to be these people. We get to be the ones who are involved in helping and care and show up because the love of Christ is in us, flowing out in who we are and what we do. And while we live here in these beautiful homes and beautiful neighborhoods, we're praying for our cities. We're getting to know people and we're involved and we're hoping that these communities will prosper. Yes, our aim is always Christ. Our aim is to be his guys, his girls, and who he's called us to be. And while we're here, we get to make an impact for good right where we are. Because we are followers of Jesus Christ, we're not the ones who are known for being grouchy and complaining about everything. We're not the ones making things harder than they need to be. We're not the ones trying to tear everything down because it's different and it doesn't feel comfortable to us. We are giving the best of ourselves away to be loving and gracious and kind and helpful. We try to run into problems and see where we can help and be light in the darkness and how to do what we can in the big things and the little things. And we become followers of Jesus Christ, not because of our obnoxiousness, but because of our graciousness. We become the obvious people in the world who know God and love him because of the healthy choices we're making again and again and again. Because of how we treat people, because of how we help, how we go out of our way to be involved and do the next right thing. The truth is, those things don't just happen by chance. They just don't pop up in our life accidentally that we get to become those kind of people. Daniel and his friends set themselves apart in their faith and in their commitment to God. They didn't just chance into that. They didn't just pick that up overnight. It was a daily choice they had to make. And guess what? They had to say no to good things to really give their lives away for the right things. Every single day, they sat with groups of people who ate wonderful things, and they weren't bad things. But Daniel and his friends made this decision, and they repeatedly said no to something so they could go all in on their yes with something else. It was these daily choices, these daily decisions that allowed them to do the hard work. It was these daily routines that allowed them to know God in the kind of way that they could challenge themselves and challenge the system that they lived in this kind of way. They brought their faith into this new world with them. And friends, no matter what happens around us, we bring into it the faith that we have right now. We bring into what's going on who we are today. And I know we always think like one day we'll be different people, one day we'll be healthier, one day we'll be more filled with faith and just like these spiritual giants, we'll grow stronger. Okay, but what we do right now determines what our one day is going to look like. The decisions we're making today affect and determine how healthy we're going to be in the future, how much we will grow in our faith. Jeff Olson is a super smart guy. He said, if you can survive, then you can succeed. He makes it like just as basic as that. If you can survive at life, then you have the necessary skill sets to succeed in life. It says the things that take you out of failure and up towards survival and success, they're actually simple things. Mostly they're the little things you do every day that nobody else even notices. Things like taking just a little bit out of your paycheck and putting it away to save and leaving it there and not touching it. Or giving yourself time to exercise every day to be healthy and not skipping it. Reading 10 books of a learning, educational, inspiring, life-changing book. You read 10 pages every single day. Man, you could finish a good-sized book this year that could help you think differently and grow. Or take a moment to sell somebody something kind that you appreciate them. And if you do that consistently, just imagine if you said something nice to somebody in your family every single day. It builds up and it adds up over time. If you made time to read your Bible every day, pray every day, these simple daily decisions, they become productive actions in our life. And as we repeat them consistently over time, they become who we are. He says, you have complete control over the direction the rest of your life takes because what you do matters. He says, life isn't a practice session. There's no dress rehearsal. There's no treading water or running in place because everything is in motion. Life is in motion. And if we aren't improving, enriching, building, unfolding, if you're not adding assets to your personal and professional value every day, then you're headed down the curve. But he says, here's the key. Start somewhere. Wherever you can take action, begin there. Create little successes and don't wait. Because the choices we make right now, every day in our life, they affect the life we're living. And our life is perfectly set up to get us the results that we're getting. Right now, what we're doing gets the results in life that we're getting. And if we want the results to change, we have to change the choices. We have to change the small, every decisions that we make. Everyday decisions. It's hard to live a disciplined life. It's easier to just let the hard choices go. But we don't live productive, active lives if we don't hold ourselves to a higher standard. He said, it's never too late to start, but it's always too late to wait. What could we start today? What time could we just give to making healthy, productive choices every single day? What area of your life need discipline? Need to make the hard choice to say, I'm going to do this every day, even when I don't want to. Where is God calling you to make a difference in your world, in your community, in your city? Maybe, like Daniel and his friends, we could make the right choice today that empowers us to make a difference for good. But to do that, we have to have time with God, connecting to him so that he's teaching us, growing us, helping our hearts be open to him and our world in new ways. Dear Heavenly Father, I pray that you would help us. I pray that you would encourage something within us to just take a look at our life and the choices that we make. I pray, Father, as we examine our world and our lives and who we are, that you would give us a fresh understanding of who we could be right now. I pray, Father, whatever decisions we've been holding off on, you would give us the courage to start saying yes to. I pray, Father, that we would look at the decisions we make every single day, and we would find ways to be more disciplined in who you've called us to be. And I pray, Father, the result of this would be lives of maturity and faith and growth. I pray that the work you do in us would spill out into our world and our world would know peace and prosperity because of who you are and what you are doing in us and through us. I pray this all.